You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batour Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Roy Bellamy, Chris Cody, Jeremy Tashay with you here. We are a day after the Florida Panthers defeated the Carolina Hurricanes game one in quadruple overtime. Thanks to Chuck. That game ended at 2 a.m. I slept in my hockey jersey, my Panthers jersey that I wore to the studio yesterday.
Fully nude under the jersey, right? Just the jersey is how
it's just the jersey.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh, everybody. Yeah, exactly. Went that way under the covers. Boys.
Roy, we should be tired right now, but I'm not tired because of one of the most epic games in Panther history. My wife was asleep. She went to sleep. She had to work today. So she went to bed. I had to be quiet. It was so intense. Everyone was so tired. It's so amazing. The broadcasters, like Biz and all them during the break, the fans were sleeping. Just imagine the players. Like, think how tired, Jeremy, you were during that game. Now imagine being Brandon Montour.
I was so tired during that game that I fell asleep at points during that game and woke back up during that game. Like, I was just doing the... Because it was the longest game I've ever experienced It was unbelievable. I mean, the idea that Brandon Montour was actually physically on the ice for a full hour of ice time, like, it was insane. And it was so funny because, like, from, you know, obviously for me, I'm looking at it from the Bally side as well, and like, for Bally, they didn't go on air until afterward. It's just a post game show, and Katie Engelson, the sideline reporter for the Panthers, is at this watch party in Fort Lauderdale that's going into all hours of the morning. And what's crazy is fans were sticking around. Like, it was crazy at that watch party. This was one of the most unbelievable things I've experienced in South Florida sports.
Talking about the Tkachuk goal, this is similar to the Verhage goal in Game 7 of the Boston series, except this was on the near side boards. They won a puck battle. It was Sam Bennett again. He was able to feed Matt Tkachuk, who skated out towards the slot and just threw the puck on net. Boom. Game winner.
And I noted in that whole game, Roy, I was saying, like, because I know you've been talking about Carolina's defense, and you could see it. It was tough for us to generate any kind of control in the zone. The best strategy for us was what's been working for us the entire playoffs: dump the puck behind the net and just go to work. And that's how, like you said, that's how they got this goal. All of our goals seem to start from behind the net. Somebody gains possession behind their net, makes a pass, or skates around, but they all start with this forecheck. It's hilarious that you've been talking about the forecheck for decades around here, but it's literally the bread and butter for this team.
And even that barely worked. I mean, that's how stifling the Hurricanes' defense was all game. It only took 4 overtimes for everybody to get tired for that to actually work the thump and chase.
Right, that kind of feels like all it was. It's just eventually they were so dominant, but eventually they just got tired. So there had to be sort of cracks where the Panthers could fit in. And it was only with seconds left in the fourth overtime. That easily could have gone to 5 overtimes and beyond. But, like, I don't think we can go any further without talking about Bob. Sergei Bobrovsky had 63 saves.
It's a little bit of a cheat code. People are, like, taking that number and running with it. We played 4 overtime.
Yeah, so but, like, he had to make it. You could take away and say, like, look, obviously that's compiling.
Do it in 3 periods. Have 63 saves in 3 periods.
All right, cool.
I'm kidding.
Tony Kashuk did that.
Bob's amazing.
Yeah, I just can't believe that this guy who, for not just this season, but for like multiple years here with Florida, has had this crazy sort of up and down. And for that matter, he would admit a lot of down in his Florida Panthers tenure, to now be playing, you know, for a guy who's already had one of the craziest postseason runs for a goalie, like to be playing what, some of the best hockey of his entire career, like as they're taking down all these monsters over and over again. And considering you now just like stole home ice, and not that that's been a huge thing. Like, I believe the Panthers now are riding a 7-game road win streak, which is insane. Yeah. Like, all of this, just none of it makes any sense. And we keep doing that with the Heat, where we're like, how do they keep doing this? I feel the same way about the Panthers, where it's like, how do they keep doing this in this way?
I almost prefer to start playoff series on the road. It's like, it's like if you lose, you kind of feel like the pressure's on them.
Choice in the matter.
It's a great point.
Wayne Gretzky, Wayno, as Biz was calling him, was saying the entire game of like, once we got into more overtimes, the pressure's all on Carolina here.
Yep.
It's like if the Panthers win, it's just a great bonus win. And if Carolina loses, they're feeling like, holy shit, we lost one here. And it's just like, I was feeling at ease almost the entire time, because I was like, even if we lose this, it's a road game. So it's like, there's just like a stress-free feeling of starting on the road.
Yeah, I would rather start on the road, 5-on-5, no penalties at all, each way. That's where I am right now at this point. But I want to talk about the goal that was overturned in the first overtime.
Oh, my God.
Colin Wright, who was pushed into the crease, into Freddie Anderson. He was pushed into the crease, right, by the defenseman.
Seemed to make an effort, and seemed to make an effort to like get out.
He tried to get out. He tried to get out. He tried to get out of the crease. Made incidental content. Goal was overturned. Technically, this game should have ended 2 hours before it actually ended in the first overtime. But hey, what are you gonna do?
And the group chats were flying. We were like celebrating. Like it felt like a good 30 to 40 seconds before we realized, oh wait, they're reviewing this.
It was. I've never seen such a long wait in between. It's like when a ref sort of waits, like in basketball, when a ref waits to see if a layup goes in before calling a foul. Except it just felt like an eternity. Like the Panthers were celebrating. Everybody on Twitter was celebrating. I had said a whole long thing where it's like, yeah, it's over, 5-0 in overtime. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, whoops. Yep. It's really crazy to think that game could have been over as early as it was, and that it was a judgment call. Like, thank goodness that ends up going the way it does and the Panthers do win, so that it should have been over a couple hours earlier, as opposed to, you know, the Panthers basically playing this in protest.
It was a judgment call from the guys in Toronto. That's where the replay
of course it is.
Toronto. Interesting.
Toronto, yeah.
Dude, how about Lomberg, though? How about that fourth line? I mean, Lomberg coming back into the lineup. It was a little, you know, the group texts were kind of like, we're messing with chemistry here. You know, we've been winning without him. But I was saying before Lomberg even got that goal that was some of the best energy. The Barkov for Hagee line was great yesterday. But arguably, until Tkachuk scored, I was making the argument for that fourth line being as good a line yesterday for us. Anytime Lomberg, like they were talking in that in the intermission reports, Lomberg had the most energy late in that game. Like, he was flying around the ice when everybody was dead. And I'm glad to have Lomberg back. This team is so much fun. And I am just like, we could do a repeat just saying these words of, this is fun.
Yeah.
Like
no, that was not fun.
I loved it, dude. I'm trying to be in the moment in these games. Like in the Heat game a couple nights ago, last night, I'm just kind of like doing like, hey guys, this is really cool what we're experiencing. Like, even if we lose, like there needs to be a small piece of the pie chart that win or lose, we're just enjoying this.
Well, and there's this crazy part with both of these teams, like Dan made fun of me the other day when I said that Kevin Love brought this level of chemistry to this team that made them really love each other, and, you know, that matters as they go into the postseason, but it clearly has. Like, it just absolutely, it's a fact, it has. But with the Panthers, it's the same thing. Like, this Panthers team is in this mode where they absolutely love each other from the top of the roster down to the last guy who plays. And Lomberg was like a perfect example of coming back in, providing energy, and that in a moment where, I mean, literally there's not a game where you could need more energy. His energy really helped buoy this team in moments where, you're right, that fourth line was really kind of doing a lot to kind of keep them in this game and bring that level of excitement to it.
Yeah, it kind of helped because they had the least minutes of everybody who's played out there. So,
like, the fourth line guys are going to get more of a go, but they made the most of it. It wasn't like they were just like, we're out here, holy shit, we're not prepared for this. They were like, we're out here. Anytime that fourth line got on the ice, I was saying to my friend, I'm like, we're like, this line is going to get this goal. That's why when Lomberg got that goal, I had been saying the entire game, I'm like, it was a victory lap for me. I was like, this fourth line has been fantastic. And then he got the goal, and then it got taken away, and he bit the stick. God, I love Lomberg. But I'm telling you, even the crew, I know I love the TNT hockey crew. That's why I
get don't get me started on Biz.
I love like the intermissions with those, but even they felt the Panthers were going to win when the first overtime came. They're like, who scores the goal? I believe there's five guys at that table and they picked four Panthers. So it's like everybody
didn't pick the Panthers.
It was,
He's been he picked a stall.
Right.
Oh, okay.
He picked a stall. But Paul Bissonnette, though, has been anti-Panthers the entire playoffs.
He's just a Maple Leafs fan. He's given them their flowers.
The entire playoffs, though, of course. Boston, you know, greatest regular season team in the history of the NHL. Of course he's going to pick them. Toronto, the entire series, because he's a Maple Leafs fan. Sounds like me.
Going back to what you were talking about before, also of playing these games on the road, like, that's the other part where, and again, this is actually something that Dan mentioned on the show, I think, in the Thursday local hour, where it was like, Heat fans haven't had to be scared. It's sort of the same, and obviously the Panthers were down 3-1. That's different. But like in playing where you've now won so many road games, and particularly these road game ones, it's like that immediately provides such a crazy amount of relief to the series, because you go into game two and you just, it's like, all right, cool. If you win, awesome. But if you lose game two, there's no pressure. Like these next couple of nights, tonight's Heat
there's
game.
There's no pressure till game four. We could lose if we lose to next game, we're like, it's all right, 1-1, going home with a split. And then even if we lose game three, it's like we got game four to tie it up. Like,
right, and these teams have been so good on the road.
Yeah, it's just it's
and
such
in overtime because that's their fifth win.
Well, that's what's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you're feeling so much confidence going into overtime, like, oh, these guys are gonna win, like, just based off of past history, like, oh boy. But I that was not fun last night. I'm sorry.
Enjoyed it, man. That's why I have the perspective of last night. I was kind of saying to people, like, even if the Lomberg goal gets taken away, even if we lose this game, this is how the playoffs are supposed to work. You're supposed to lose on the road game one. Like, we're just so spoiled right now with grabbing these games, getting these 50-50 games, where it's like, I was prepared last night to just be like, guys, we're down 0-1-0. This is how this is supposed to work. Like, right. I was going to be cool with it just because, like, we're due to have one series where we're down a little bit. Like, this is not how this is supposed to work. It's amazing. We're just – we have that je ne sais quoi right now of – going to get – I don't even know if I use that right.
I love that you use that. The Panthers, genocide.
At least you tried.
There's just something about this team right now combined with the hot goalie. Like, we are just that team right now. It is going to be hard for – like, everybody is buying in. Gretzky, after the game, he's just like, this team's got the hot goalie. They're one unit. They're cohesive. When their defensemen go up, they're off. You saw it when they were breaking down that one intermission. Like, we are a unit right now. Our guys just don't even have to look at each other. It's like, oh, I'm covering for you. It's positionless hockey almost at times.
Yeah, you saw the defenseman pinching in.
Yeah.
On some of those plays. I mean,
love
Mark
a good
Stahl.
Pinching in. Love a good
Mark
pinching in.
Stahl pinching in on plays with his cement skates.
And then there was one. Crazy. Which Stahl is number 18?
That would be Mark Stahl.
Yeah. He at one point he took a slap shot to the shin, and then they show him on the. This must have been third overtime, and then they just show a cut of him on the bench right after that, like nestling up against one of his teammates because he was just like, "Oh, that hurts so much."
Yeah,
but that's the level of love there, man. I love it.
I was worried about that one because he's already cement skated. Yeah. To have something like that happen to his legs, not going to help.
What do we think Maurice thought of that cross-check call on Aaron Ekblad? What do we think of that?
I mean, you saw his reaction after the first period when he walked off, when he walked off the ice yelling at the officials. Like,
I saw
that all night.
I saw some offensive things being mouthed. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Let's be glad that those were not said out loud on a kind of microphone.
Oh, Paul Maurice deserves his flowers too, though, man. He has turned this team. It's so funny. Like,
we flipped more on Bob. I was about to say, I know. I mean, don't even get me started on Witty. We asked him to be here today. Where is he? He's got a thing.
Coward.
Who have we flipped? Who have we flipped more on, Bob or Maurice? It's like 4 months ago. If I said to you, in 4 months, we are going to absolutely love Bobrovsky and Maurice, you would have told me I was crazy. But which one of those would you have said is more crazy?
Maurice, I think, because of the amount of points in the standings the Panthers got compared to this year, despite the fact that Bob, who's making a lot of money, hasn't performed up to that contract up until now.
Now he has. Like, we could agree. Even if we lose the rest of the way, he has done enough.
Earned every dime. Earned every dime.
Yeah, we could stop that talk. He's earned every bit of that money.
We were singing Lion King like 3 weeks ago.
It's crazy.
Like, I was like every day, not even. Like, it was just like, well, look where we are.
How does Alex Lyon feel about this?
Dude, he loves it.
I'm sure he's excited. I mean, he's playing his old team. He's up 1-0 right now after 4 overtimes. He was probably ready to go.
And he didn't have to play.
I was imagining if just randomly before last game, Maurice comes in. Hour before face off, Lyon, you're starting tonight. You would have just been like, no, I'm not. Bob's not. Like, you know what I mean? Like, imagine that, like, being put online. He'd be like, what are you doing? No.
Why are you doing this to me?
I wouldn't be
surprised if he does that for game two.
Really?
Just given quadruple overtime? That makes sense.
They played 7 1/3 period.
No.
So that
they played two and a third games last night.
Roy, you have more experience with this of just following playoff hockey. I get from a conditioning and energy level standpoint, it makes sense to give him a day off, but they can't actually do that, right?
They can. They absolutely can. Bob has played every game since early in the Boston series, so they absolutely can, especially coming off of 7 periods of hockey. Come on, man. They got a day off.
That was hilarious when the broadcasters were like, oh, game two is tomorrow, because it was past midnight. It was 2 a.m. So we were in Friday. So it's like, we'll see you tomorrow for game two.
And we'll see you tomorrow night.
And in less than 12 hours, we have Miami Heat basketball.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Let's get you ready for that with David Sampson and Adnan Anver.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Dan Le Batard.
Sports.
Stugats.
More sports.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Michael J. Fox has a new documentary on Apple. I have not gotten to it yet, but I imagine it is heartbreaking and difficult to watch, and also wildly interesting that he would leave himself that vulnerable, because his particular Parkinson's ailment is a special kind of awful prison. And we're going to try and lighten that up a little bit by talking all-time top five Michael J. Fox movies. We've got two movie experts with us here. Adnan Virk, who does Cinephile podcast, produced by Chris Cody, and David Sampson, nothing personal. He reviews a movie every week. Billy, why are you laughing already? I haven't gotten to introducing the show yet.
Well, I mean, we have two guys that watch a lot of movies. I don't know if they're necessarily experts.
I was going to say.
Fair thing to
say. Wow. That's a cool thing to say, man.
Yeah. Billy,
yeah. Oh, I'm not disputing that at all. I mean, Amin's here, so he does bad movies.
Wow. Okay, Cody, you can let Billy know. Now I'm IMDb.com. So last time I checked, I'm on IMDb. I think that makes me a movie expert. Covered the Oscars twice. Won an Emmy for my Oscars coverage. But go ahead, Billy. Go ahead and dispute that we're not Oscars experts. No problem. All good.
Okay. I'm
with Billy.
This is the thing, though. We've had this tension around here for a bit, Adnan. You take this. David takes this very seriously. And these guys think, and to be fair, Amin takes it very seriously. He might not look like he's taking it seriously, but Cinephobe is a podcast where he's doing a lot of work to review bad movies and put comedy around those bad movies. But our movie experts are here. They are not Amin. They are Adnan, and they are David Sampson, and they are credentialed because, Billy, they don't just watch the Fast and the Furious movies. Like, they have movie opinions.
Oh, I'm sorry. One of the
What is Cinephobe?
Oh, I'm glad you asked.
Sampson off the top rope.
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach Harper and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes, and we try to ascertain whether they're accurately poorly rated or perhaps didn't get a fair shake. That Cinephobe is produced by Anthony Mays, and you get it wherever you get podcasts.
I mean, there is no team.
I shout out my teammates.
David, what they also do, sometimes they take down sacred cows, movies that people love, and they tear them apart. That's why Amin had to be on to discuss The Departed, which I know he was not going to like, and I had to defend it. So this sounds like a match made in heaven. Samson's got to go on Amin's pod now and talk about Fearless.
I have never, for the record, you would think that being a part of the Metal Arc family, that call would come. But I think I ruined it when I went on your pod one time, Adnan, and I think that you made it clear in a company-wide memo, and this is before I even joined Metal Arc, that I was no longer permitted to appear on Cinephile.
Well, I just made it clear, like, hey, you make one appearance, David, I think we're good. You don't need to go on every single podcast, right? Less is more. Come on.
Well, I believe this is an affliction that the entirety of the show suffers when it comes to David Sampson and our audience. And before we get to top five Michael J. Fox movies of all times, Mike did want to talk to Sampson about something business related because Nothing Personal is an extraordinary sports business podcast. And Mike Ryan wanted to ask you, David, I was surprised to hear this because I wanted to do a movie segment with you guys and talk Michael J. Fox, but he wants to talk about the Coyotes possibly moving with you.
David, congratulations on your legacy continuing to grow in legend because Tempe, Arizona, they voted against the entertainment district, a $2 billion project, and it looks like the Arizona Coyotes have no choice but to relocate. And I've devised this plan. Considering you sold a team or ruined a team in the Quebec province, I have devised a plan to totally up your Q rating back in Canada. Let's take the Coyotes and move them to Quebec City because you ruined public finance for stadiums forevermore.
So obviously that's not correct given what happened in Buffalo and certainly what happened in Florida still after the Marlins. What happened in Tempe is interesting to me in that Gary Bettman was ill-prepared to even respond because they thought that the referendum were going to pass and they were going to get all this public money. And the best they could come up with was, hey, now we're going to reconnoiter and figure out what we're going to do. And I suggested they should go hard after the people of Tempe, after the politicians, and say, you just ruined your chance of having hockey in Arizona. Because the official wait to see in today's show is that the Coyotes are going to relocate. Quebec City is one of the possible choices, but still Quebec City's market is quite a bit smaller than the Phoenix market. So I don't think they're the leader in the clubhouse to get a hockey team back, but they're certainly going to be used as a stalking horse. But you are 100% right. The Coyotes in Phoenix are done.
The Yotes.
Thank you. Reconnoiter, useless, like truly useless commentary. Reconnoiter, what does that word mean? Is that a word that's correct? I've not heard that word before.
I went to school with him.
yeah, that's a that means they're gonna talk, they're gonna meet, and they're gonna figure out what to do next.
All right, put it on the poll, please, Billy. Do you know what the word reconnoiter means, and are you an asshole if you use it instead of talking? Adnan, can you please tell me? I'd like to understand the history of this, because I've always thought that you and David would do a great movie segment together, and I'm hell bent on proving it here. However, Chris Cody, every time I mention it to him, walks away and disappears into the shadows. He hides from me. He does not answer my questions about it. He doesn't want to actually lead here, because I've put him between a rock and a hard place, where I'm telling him Samson needs to be on with Adnan more, and he doesn't want to just say to me, Adnan really doesn't want to do this with Samson.
It's 100% accurate, Dan, let's be honest. I mean, by the way, I would like to chime in on Quebec City, which is one of my favorite cities in the world. If anybody cannot afford a trip to Paris, France, go to Quebec City, go to Old Quebec. It's fantastic. David's right. They're too small to have a hockey team. It's only a city of maybe 450,000 people. But God, go to Old Quebec. It is absolutely gorgeous. Back to me and Samson. Listen, I like David. I deeply respect his work. I think Nothing Personal is a fantastic podcast if you want to learn about the business of sport. I love hearing him and Skipper debate back and forth.
Chicken thon.
You don't like his podcast, you mean?
Adnan, I'm pretty tired. I must tell you. How's it feel? I don't mind doing this stuff with you, Adnan, if that's what Dan wants and that's what will make MetalArk better. But it's not exactly a great working atmosphere, a great environment. When I know that I'm with you, you have this view of my movies or my movie taste as somehow not being worthy of being on the same screen as you. I just don't get it. You've never even explained it to me, other than giving your producer, Chris Cody, a marching order, which is make sure that Samson in no way is involved in movies and MetalArk, as though somehow that's going to be dispositive. So I think it's time that you maybe took a second look and gave me a second chance.
Well, listen, I'm not above reproach and taking a look at things, but Dan, can you put on the poll, if you use the word depositive in a segment, does that make you an asshole? Can we put that on the poll, please?
Yes.
David, you
it's
have...
It's dispositive.
Wait, David, so you have Adnan being the one that's been critical of your movie knowledge. Is that how you have this painted? Because you've been the one taking shots at Adnan's movie knowledge over his entire existence with this company.
No, actually, that's not what I criticize. I criticize the fact that when Adnan does a review, I feel as though he's reading a review, speaking extremely quickly and using big words. Ironically, what you're saying to me, I'm doing, Adnan, and you're giving ordinary reviews that don't mean that you've actually thought about the movie. You're just responding to the way the wind is blowing about a particular movie or about a particular director, where my view of movies is a little more nuanced. And you'll see in my top five, Michael J. Fox, I've got movies in the top five that I think are absolutely worthy of top five. And my guess is, if we're even 40% similar in a catalog that's not that large, if you think of Michael J. Fox, if we're even 40% similar, I'm going to think that's a lot.
Okay, give me number five. I want to hear what you think of Life with Mikey. Let's go for it.
Are you running this, or is Dan?
Wait a minute. He got it right? He got it right? I don't know what your top five is. He just guessed out of the sky. Yeah, Life of Mikey.
It's predictable. The worst movie Michael J. Fox ever made. I'm sure it's on David's list. Life with Mikey.
What a lame beef, right, by the way. Who knows movies better?
There's also Stuart Little 3, so.
You say what a lame beef, but everything that exists around our show is who knows sports better.
I know.
I think this guy is the MVP. No, this guy's the MVP. And people care about movies the same way. These two people care about movies in a way that's completely unreasonable. So what is your top five, fifth Michael J. Fox movie, David?
Life with Mikey. Let me tell you, I wanted to change my top five because I refuse to play in to this sort of narrative that my list is not good enough. And I was hoping you'd say any movie other than that, but whatever. Can we cut that? Can I switch my top five?
No.
Why? Are we live?
Adnan, what is your fifth? What is your number five?
Family Ties, the movie.
What? Oh, come on, Adnan.
What?
Come 1985, on, there was an episode where the Keatons, they all went to England, two-part episode. It's a Family Ties, the movie. You go on IMDb, it's fantastic. You cannot include a top five list of Michael J. Fox, not including Family Ties. Family Ties, the movie, number five. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Amin.
No, I remember this two-episode arc. That's not a movie. That doesn't count.
That is the lamest number five.
Well,
that makes Life with Mikey an Academy Award candidate.
Number four, David.
Number four is a movie that taught me the beginning of how to do business. It's called The Secret of My Success.
Oh.
And it is one of the great movies where people are going in and out of rooms. The scene in the mansion at the end in the party when they're doing like the death trap in and out off stage. Absolutely loved it. And in the movie is the owner of the Cleveland baseball team for Major League, who plays the love interest and his aunt, coincidentally. And it's called The Secret of My Success with Helen Slater also in that movie.
Adnan, what are your thoughts on that one?
Awesome choice by David. It's also my number four movie. The fact that Michael J. Fox plays two different characters and plays them so well. He's actually Brantley Whitford, which is the mail clerk from a small town, but he's also this high-running executive. It's fast. It's funny. It's got some great musical montages. Dancing on Sun, Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves. I've actually in agreement with David. It's a perfect 80s movie. It's quick and it's funny and it's really sharp. And it shows really Michael J. Fox's great gift for comedic timing.
The Wave.
To be clear, it's not his aunt. She's married to his uncle. So aunt by marriage.
I'm glad you clarified that because I was a little confused.
Yeah, it's not an
Are you telling
movie.
Me that if you're married, someone married to your uncle is not your aunt?
Hmm. Uncle Dick.
Number
three is a movie that changed my life. Came out in 1990.
For Love or Money.
It's called, no, that did not change my life. Julia Warner changed my life. She's in a movie called Doc Hollywood.
Oh, my God.
It's great. It's a
classic. Charles Emerson Winchester. I've seen this movie, no joke, 75 times, and not just the first 12 minutes. This is a movie about a person who is a highfalutin plastic surgeon who gets stuck in a small town, commits a crime, and his sentence is to become like Tim Matheson in Virgin River. He has to become the doctor in the small town, and they call him Doc Hollywood. He falls in love with someone there. It's exactly what I picture love could be and has never been for me. I have watched this movie to this day. So it's been 30 years of engaging in this movie and wondering what I've done wrong and how they got it right. Doc Hollywood, number three.
Adnan, you burst out in laughter as Stugatz bellowed, "That's a classic."
I think that exactly proves my point, Dan. And I love Stugatz, but Doc Hollywood is not number three. Doc Hollywood makes Life with Mikey an Academy Award contender. For God's sakes, I would take Doc Severinsen on the Tonight Show Band. I'd take Doc Rivers. I would take Doc Emmerich out of Doc Hollywood. Are you kidding me? This is a generic fish out of water comedy tale. Michael J. Fox himself has even disavowed the movie. He basically said it was on this set that he felt he had Parkinson's, as you've all seen in the movie still, you know, his fingers started tremoring. He goes, this is the kind of generic movie that I would make that would make a lot of money. And it did. It made $60 million. And he goes, there's nothing special about this movie. And there it is on David Sams's list at number three. There's nothing special about this movie. It is totally adequate. It is not one of his best movies. No way.
So where you're wrong is that it is something special because it's something special to me. And this is the genesis of our problem, that you don't give me the space to have something special for me that may not be special for you.
Number three, Adnan.
Mine is a great one. Casualties of War. Brian De Palma directed. This showed Michael J. Fox's range. Thank you. Him and Sean Penn together. Sean Penn froze him out. Sean Penn on set goes, I'm not going to talk to this guy because we're adversaries in the movie. At one point, he whispers in Michael J. Fox's ear, you're nothing but a television actor. It's a really serious, intense movie. It's flawed. The bookends don't work. But this story about a gang of U.S. platoons who rape a woman in Vietnam, then murder her, and Michael J. Fox's crusade to bring this crew to justice, it showed a really strong, dramatic turn by Michael J. Fox. It showed he could be a lot more than just Alex B. Keaton and Marty McFly. Brian De Palma's Casualties of War at number three.
There is so much I want to talk to you guys about outside of the movies. I actually want to talk about baseball with you, but this segment's running long, and it's running long. Tony, have you heard of a single movie that
Not a one, Dan. I have no idea about any movie that's been mentioned.
Really? Not Family Ties,
We've got an age, we've got a generation problem here. I don't think it's about to get any younger. Can we speed this up, gentlemen? Number two, Samson.
The American President.
Fantastic.
Nah, I don't know.
Good movie. It's got its moments. I only criticism this, Michael J. Fox supporting role, and I don't think it's strong enough that he steals the movie. It's still a Michael Douglas and Annette Bening film. Wonderful script by Aaron Sorkin. A little schmaltzy at times, but I'm with you. Richard Dreyfuss
asked us to speed it up, Adnan.
Okay, fair enough. Number two, The Hard Way, satiric, funny, action comedy. Him and James Woods together, terrific chemistry. The Hard Way is, no, it's not terrible. It's Funny Samson. You know it's funny. Number two is The Hard Way.
All right, now you're going too fast because Tony hasn't heard of any
is
of these.
Is American President Get Off My Plane?
No, that's a different
one. Yes, yes.
No, that's a classic. Though.
That's the one.
That is a different one. Thank you, Billy. Always helpful.
Get Off My Plane.
Yes. Number one, David Samson. The number one David Samson Michael J. Fox movie.
I think we can end this segment because we're going to have full agreement. Back to the Future, the original, is the best Michael J. Fox movie with Christopher Lloyd, obviously, Crispin Glover, Leah Thompson. It should never be remade. It is a movie that is a classic, and it's good. And if you've never heard of it, Tony, then I'm going
to
be very
sad. No, Dave, I'm a big Back to the Future fan.
Okay.
Adnan, you agree?
Let's hop on our hoverboards in agreement. Fantastic choice at number one, a wonderful family film. It's in my top 20 all time. I love Back to the Future and everything about it. Save the Clock Tower.
You mean to tell me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
I figured if you're going to do it, you might as well do it with style.
I went on the studio tour and saw the DeLorean in real life. It's tiny. It freaked me out how small it was.
Money! gentlemen,
studio tour.
Thank you. We've got Cinephile, we've got Cinephobe, and we've got Nothing Personal with David Samson.
No Teen Wolf, huh?
No Teen Wolf.
Racist. Honorable mention.
An American President was not a Michael J. Fox movie. That was,
you,
it was a Michael Douglas movie.
I have
movie.
One quick question for David on the way out. You look great. There's something about it. And I just, my honest question is, if you got Botox, would you tell me?
100% I would tell you.
Did you get Botox?
No.
Absolutely not.
Nah, I don't believe you. Look at how smooth it is. Okay, yeah, something's going on there.
Yo, chicken thigh.
Why? You vitamin B-ing. You vitamin B-ing.
Can I hang up now?
Fillers. See you later.
All right. Golly. Thanks, guys.
Don Lebatard.
Trist and Shout.
Stugatz.
Trist and Shout.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Guys, I'm calling bullshit on science. Or not science, I should say, but...
Dangerous game there, buddy.
Conventional wisdom. No,
that's fine.
Tony, I think you're going to be on my side on this one.
Okay, I'm in.
Right? That's all it took.
He hasn't said it yet.
Yeah.
No, I'm in though.
But what if you're not in?
No, I'll be in.
Okay.
Tony will be in.
All right.
Someone casually mentioned the saying that we've all heard a bunch of times. No two snowflakes are alike. And I've lived my entire life saying, oh yeah, no two snowflakes are alike. And then like a week ago, I thought to myself, that's kind of bullshit, isn't it? Like we don't know. You know how many snowflakes have existed in the history of the world? How can we check against this? How can we, what's the quality control? How do I know a snowflake from like 1923 isn't the same, in Russia, isn't the same as one that's happening right now, like in the South Pole somewhere?
Well, because a representative sample suggests that no two snowflakes are alike. Over the course of reviewing these things under microscope, they have never found two that are alike.
Yeah, because there are millions and millions of snowflakes, and we're not even counting the ones that melt.
Are you skeptical of fingerprints, too? Because I feel like this is in the same vein.
I'm totally with Amin on this. Like, unless you've checked every single snowflake, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know? Science tells us so? Because
science is wrong sometimes.
Sometimes. Well, I'm not going to say science is wrong. I'm going to say people are wrong.
The scientific consensus states that the likelihood of two large snow crystals being identical is flatly zero.
Oh, shut up.
Okay, what's the proof?
How do they know?
That flatly seems a little unnecessary. It's just like flatly zero.
Yeah, like I feel like they just say things, man, sometimes.
I think you should really seize on two large snow crystals being identical because that opens the door for two small snow crystals being identically alike.
There you go.
Now, guys, these snowflakes are all the same. They all care about human rights and decency. Ugh, snowflakes.
Different kind of snowflake.
Shit, my bad.
Wait, who's that? Fingerprints? That's another one. How do I know?
You're just skeptical?
Maybe I have the same fingerprints as Abraham Lincoln. How do I know?
You know what trips me out?
Honest Abe.
On the planet, there is someone that looks exactly like us.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. No, exactly like us. Well, we all have a doppelganger out there.
Yeah.
And... We'll
that, can't be that can't be true that we all do.
No, we all do. There is,
as they say, there's like seven of
There's like seven people on the planet that look Exactly like
at the same time or in history?
The same damn time.
Who's yours, Mike?
No, nude or with clothes on?
I've seen all of Chris's because they're always on Instagram playing basketball.
I know. People are like,
but anytime anyone fat is playing sports and is right. a little bit ginger.
That's the thing. Like I get all the time in public. You look just like it's like I just have red hair. That's right. It.
I get Clooney. Who do you get?
Which Clooney?
George.
Ooh. Oh. Actually, the number's gone down. Scientists now say that statistically speaking, every person has roughly 6 doppelgangers out there in the world.
So you're saying they were wrong about 7?
Hmm. What else are they wrong about?
Exactly. Because science is a liar sometimes.
No. Actually, that means what the confusion is, there are 7 people on the planet with exactly your face.
Oh, I'm the 7th.
Yeah, you're the 7th person.
No, this isn't like that joke of, you know, your mom has 4 kids, north, south, east, and what's the 4th one? You know what I mean? So guys, what's the 4th one?
No idea. I was looking up my doppelganger.
Who's your doppelganger?
How would you do that?
Can't Google that.
No, I can. I was looking for his name. I think it's this guy, Jonathan Hawk, or something like that. It looks exactly like me. People send it to me all the time
the
on Twitter.
Player?
Yeah, it's that or Clooney.
People say that I look like Jamichael Green of the Golden State Warriors, and I don't see it at all. His hairline is way too strong, first of all.
I don't think you look anything like Jonathan Hawk.
No. I don't either, but people send it to me for some reason.
I mean, certainly not these days.
Stugas looks like Tom Sizemore to me.
Ooh, I'll take it.
Jermichael Green.
I don't look,
but you look like Tom Sizemore today.
Yes.
That's a dangerous game you're playing with me, Chris.
I didn't say it. He did.
People tell me I look like
So I look like a dead person.
Yeah, but freshly dead.
Thank you.
A grateful one.
I'll take it.
People tell me I look like anyone with a hat and glasses.
Yeah.
Anytime anyone's anywhere with a hat and glasses, like, is that you, Bill?
Kind of like Bartman.
Yeah, Rodrigo Blankenship.
Yeah.
Michael McDaniel.
Do you call him Michael?
I don't know. I hate that there are too many mics. There are way too many mics.
I was once at a restaurant. I can find it. It's probably 3 or 4 years ago now. In my phone, I have a picture of 2 people that look like Stugatz before and after. It looked like a father and son. But it was, I know it's just, unless I can find this picture, this story isn't really going to go much.
It doesn't really do it.
I'm going to look it up, though, and we're going to close this segment with a great picture of two random people.
I'll look it up
people.
The same. I think they sent it to me as well.
But also, here's the payoff. You're just going to see it on your phone.
Yeah.
I'll show the camera.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can zoom in. Don't be such a skeptic, Billy.
Or am I not, Billy?
I don't like it. As I just kind of grabbed the steering wheel here, I don't like it when restaurants, if you go to a fancy restaurant and I order soup, you pour the soup in the bowl for me. You guys ever go to these restaurants where like you get a bowl,
talking
there's
about
some stuff in the bowl?
Pho?
Maybe pho.
Yeah, you pour.
No, you
the
mean
broth.
Like a lobster bisque that the lobster's already on the bottom,
no,
and you have to pour
it,
in.
If
the
I'm
bisque?
Ordering it to go, the pho, like I'm with you. I want my liquid separate. But if I'm going to this restaurant to eat, I've been before where it's like, let me get clam chowder, and they bring you a bowl, and there's like a few potatoes in the bowl, and then it's like, what's this? And then they bring you a little liquid to like pour.
I must never had soup at a fancy restaurant then, because I've never seen this self-serve pouring that you're talking
like
about.
Yeah, I love it.
This is something that happens to you a lot?
A handful of times where I'm just like, why am I having, like, this is, you bring me
you want
the
people
soup
to serve
in the
you.
Bowl. I'm just saying, you bring me a
if
bowl.
If I wanted to serve myself soup, I would have stayed home for
Zagak.
Dinner. Right.
I learned recently along these lines. I just learned recently that when you go to a steakhouse, you order like a bone-in ribeye, you can instruct them to debone it and cut it up for you.
Yeah.
I do it all
slice
the time.
It thin, got the bone on
there.
Yeah. Like put it back into place. Like
in the shape. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why can't you do that, Chris? Can you tell them, hey, can you pour the soup for me?
I should, though. I mean, I'm not that. Like, I'm just complaining about it afterwards. I'm not going to actually go through.
This is so difficult, just turning your hand into the bowl.
No, my point is they're trying to be like, ooh, this is a fancy restaurant. At this place, you can now pour it over. It's like they're trying to, like, impress me with that. It's just like, just give me the soup.
You know what my version of that is? When you order a wine and then they pour a little bit of the wine in there and I'm expected to like...
Whoever sends that back? Who's ever like, this is just not right
No, people
me.
Do it though. People they do. Like wine snobs do it. They'll taste it. They don't like it. They send it back.
My dad will like spin that thing around for like 7 straight minutes. He always likes it. Like he's not doing anything.
Does he sniff it?
Because he smells
it, right?
He's
got to sniff it. He's got to spin it.
Yeah.
Little rinse in the mouth like that. Like...
Like you're tasting it. Yeah.
And you got to say hints of, you know, oak or whatever.
It's like with the water. You just got to.
When you're in Italy doing like a wine thing, they tell you to like gargle it a little bit.
Whoa.
They called it, I believe it was like jeter. It's like when you get in your mouth, start saying jeter. It's like jeter.
The captain.
What?
That's what I do. That's what I do at the deli when they slice like my ham or my cheese and then they give you a little piece of paper to see if it's thin enough.
See, that's different because I'm trying to get
free snacks right there.
I always say yes right away. When sometimes I eat it, I'm like, it's a little too thick. Yep. I want it a little bit thinner. No, I always just say yes right away. I'm like, yeah, that's perfect.
You take what they give you, and then you say, a little thicker. Thicker. Yeah. No, thicker a little or thicker.
Do you take a trip around the market and come back for seconds?
Of course.
Sorry. Sorry to insult you.
Wait till there's like a new worker there that hasn't seen me.
I'm sorry, Chris. It's like the most insulting thing I've ever said to you.
So you always tell them, no matter if it's perfect or not, to give it slightly thicker just because you want more?
It's a gag.
Huh.
Or thinner.
You guys are talking about food, and it gets me thinking, because Tony, in the search for improving himself, has taken to cooking recently.
Really?
And I heard him complaining about making a terrible mistake.
Guys, this was something that I wasn't expecting, right? The other day, maybe like 2 weeks ago, I was like, all right, we're done cooking. I want to go out. I want to have a nice dinner with my wife. And I was like, man, I'm really hungry, though, but I'm in the mood for sushi. So as you know, as frequenters of sushi restaurants, sometimes when you eat sushi, it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of sit there and you're like, you know what?
You can't get the perfect amount.
It's not a meal for being hungry.
Exactly.
I'm kind of hungry.
Exactly. So
you have to complement it with like gyoza and stuff, though.
Right. Correct. But it's like, damn, I've got to order 16 rolls to be filled. And I'm like, all right, I want to do something that's like all you can eat sushi.
Oh my God, dangerous game.
Very dangerous game.
Dangerous game.
So my wife's like, okay, like I'll go with you. I have no opposition to that. Like, let's go. So I went to a place locally here in town. I'm not going to name it. But I walked in, and I guess my perception of all you can eat prior to the pandemic was different post-pandemic. So I walk in, this is the first time I walk into a place that's kind of all you can eat since the pandemic. And I'm walking around, and I'm looking around, I'm like, oh, this is disgusting. Like, I just grabbed something that somebody else has grabbed like 17 times. I grabbed the sushi roll. There's like, you know when you have the tongs?
Yeah.
And then you grab one sushi roll that has one thing?
Yeah.
And then you grab something else that has the other thing?
With the same tongs?
Right. And it's like all like built up, like caked up on the tongs.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at that, not happy with it. There was like a grill that had like churrasco and meat and stuff. And I got the churrasco and it was like rubber. I was like, oh, this is disgusting.
It's all you can eat, man. That's the problem.
It's the worst culinary mistake of my life. And I was so upset that I called Lewis and complained for 35 minutes on the phone that I was like, I will never step foot into an all-you-can-eat buffet ever again because it's the most disgusting thing of all time. And it was the worst thing that I have ever done.
Was Lewis helpful?
No.
It's a sympathetic mistake.
It was a culinary mistake in the sense that like it was something that had to do with food, and I went.
No, culinary means you're cooking.
You're cooking, yeah. I thought this was going to be a Tony cooking.
Yeah.
No.
Do you not know what culinary? You don't know what culinary means.
It has to do with food. Come on, guys. What are we doing here?
No, it
doesn't. How did you complain about this last 30 minutes? Because like this explanation was a little long.
No, because it was a lot more passionate, I want to say, when it happened.
Well, I'll just say.
Because I felt I was duped. Because not only this, it also cost me like $90 to eat there.
Which is where a lot of my anger
came from.
I actually got in my headset while you were saying that what the complaint was and how it lasted for 30 minutes. And it was just the same complaint over and over again. He wouldn't shut the f*** up about it.
Yeah. Well, imagine when you spend $90 on an all-you-can-eat buffet and feel disgusted by it. You know, you got to complain to somebody. Okay, well, Lewis answered the phone.
Well, even though the story wasn't that entertaining, I think we all now know that you don't know the meaning of culinary.
What have you been cooking, by the way?
Of or for cooking is the definition of culinary.
Hold on.
Come on, what are
we're trying to help you.
We're doing semantics.
You're on the
semantics argument now?
It's not semantics.
That's not
how semantics work. Do we have to explain the word semantics to you now?
Hold on. Before we get too deep in this hole, right? I just want to say, buffets in general are terrible for one reason. One, A, obviously, it's like cafeteria food, right?
Disagree.
They just made a bunch and they set it out there and you're supposed to eat it. But more importantly, because you end up paying so much for it, $90, whatever, there's this weird thing inside you where like, this is disgusting. I don't want to eat anymore. But I paid $90, so I have to keep forcing myself to
eat. Exactly.
Not just that plate, but many plates.
Yes.
Yes.
You force yourself to continue doing this thing that you don't like doing to justify the thing that you paid. Billy, you're shaking your head.
You've never been to CeCe's Pizza, my friend. You go in there, you pay whatever it is. I'm making money at CeCe's Pizza. I'll tell you that right now.
That's a different story, though. Pizza and sushi are two different things. Yeah.
So is culinary and just eating at a buffet.
I can't find the photo.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this. Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.